हरे ओ श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सनि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
okay, so this is Lesson 32. One should practice concentrating one's mind only on Sri Krishna, the absolute personality of Godhead, but also not disregard other empowered living beings known as demigods. And so in the meditation, because we brought about that meditation is there, it should be on Krishna, right? Exclusively. But it doesn't mean that others are neglected, right? Because the tendency of the neophyte will be to focus on Krishna, and everybody else, you know, has no meaning at all, right? It doesn't matter who they are. Just like there'll be the guru and everybody else is a schmutz, right? You know, like that. Or there may be the sannyasis and everybody else is, you know, like that. Does that make sense? So that's the tendency, is that we'll act in this way. This principle, because we do with Krishna and the demigods, because the demigods are the empowered persons that manage Krishna's universe. Right? Does that make sense? So, it is a spiritual movement, but the spiritual movement is being managed. Right? So you have officers, you have temple presidents, you have treasurers, you have secretaries, you have all these different things. So it's not that they're disregarded. Does that make sense? So that principle, we will tend to disregard others, because it's all or nothing. That's always the area. We always have difficulty in looking at what's in between. Does that make sense? You know, the two ends are easy. It's what's in between that gets difficult. Right? You know, we're here, and then there's Calcutta. That's clear. It's getting from here to Calcutta. That's where the problem is. Right? There's so many details like that. So 12:15. He by whom no one is put into difficulty, and who is not disturbed by anyone, who is equiposed in happiness and distress, fear and anxiety, is very dear to me. Notice here, so for one who is not put into difficulty, no one is put into difficulty, okay? But then it also, who is not disturbed by anyone. Because generally catch the other one, it's okay, we don't get any, disturb anybody, but we're also not disturbed by anyone. Right? Otherwise, we're being very nice, it'll be very, it's sentimental that we're trying not to disturb anybody. Like that. But we will become disturbed. Right? Or we may say, okay, oh, I'm not disturbed for myself, but I'm disturbed for this other person. You understand? That's the trick we'll use. Extended sense. Because when sense gratification looks too bold, then we use extended sense gratification. And then it sounds all nice and wonderful or, you know, noble or even spiritual. Right? You know, we try to attribute all that depending on how we're doing. It's still the same thing. It's just packaged more nicely. You know what I'm saying? That's the, yes.
Sometimes when we're preaching, we kind of disturb people.
It means you just means here disturb means that you're speaking the absolute truth. They may get disturbed, but you're not trying to disturb them. So there's a difference. Just like, let's say, you have a disagreement with somebody, okay? Now, a common tactic will be, say something that will bother them, right? It has absolutely nothing to do with the conversation. But just because they bothered you, you want to bother them back. So you'll say something, yeah, but you always do this. It's like, what's that got to do with the conversation? And then they'll feel bad and So that one doesn't do that. Mm. So one is not speaking to bother them, you know, their, you know, stinky, smelly, you know, carny, rascal nonsenses. So, you know, we're going to, you know, get out there and make them feel bad
stick
about
it to
that.
Them.
Yeah. No, it's a matter of explaining according to that. So they don't feel bad. They may understand or not understand, agree or not agree. Like that. Mm. Someone has issues, then it doesn't matter what you say, they're going to be disturbed. That's just, that's the meaning of issues, right? So, you know, you just use a word. You don't mean to use it otherwise. They take offense to it. Like you say Varnashram, or you say Brahman, or, you know, something like that, and then they start freaking out. So, but that's their own issues, right? Mm. If you know that that bothers them, if you can use another word, then you'll use that. You know, you could say Vedic culture. Generally, no one gets too disturbed by that. Like that. you know, understand? So then you can use that. But if there is no other word, or that is the meaning, or that is the exact what is meant, then you use it. But you use it pleasantly. You use it properly. You're not using it to bother them. You're using it because the point needs to be made. Does that make sense? But at the same time is it goes the other way, is one is not disturbed, means someone may do something, say something, and that to you or to others, but it doesn't disturb you. It doesn't mean that you don't care, right? Because we generally equate disturbance with care, right? And so it means for yourself it's personal, but if it's someone else, then you care. But the point is it's the caring doesn't mean you're disturbed by it. You can still care because it's not correct. But it doesn't disturb you in that it's an issue, that it's emotionally involving. Yes.
So disturbed means loss of intelligence?
Yeah, it means you won't, the intelligence won't be applied. Because the point is if you're putting someone else into difficulty, you're saying something that's not actually best for making the point. And if you're disturbed by what anybody else does, you're not going to be able to think in such a way to understand what's the best thing to say or do.
Right.
Yes.
In our day-to-day dealings that we have to deal with local people or whatever working for us, or you're trying to be nice, that's what's going on. And if you have to push the point, definitely disturb them.
But they're becoming disturbed by it, just like Yudhishthir Maharaj has no enemies. There's no one that's his enemy. It's not that Duryodhana doesn't think of him as an enemy.
Okay.
You understand? Mm. It means you're not doing anything that should disturb them. They're disturbed by it, that's another thing, because that's why it has the both. One who's not put into difficulty and who is not disturbed by anyone. Because it's both things. But you have to just analyze, is there any way you could have avoided that and got the point made? You know? And if there's not, then that's another thing. But if there is, then you try that next time. Because, well, the tendency is to look at it, well, whatever is the easiest way for me, then that's pragmatic. Because pragmatic is always a subjective. They'll always claim it's objective. Because if I say, oh, it's practical, that's supposed to mean it's an objective point. No, but it's absolutely, totally subjective. Because it's easy for them. Oh, I was just being practical, Prabhu. I mean, it's like, you know, all this etiquette gets in the way, and then we would have wasted 10 minutes, and then we could have gotten more done. But the point is there's more at stake than your 10 minutes. The relationships, long-term, you know, applications of things, repercussions that come from you know, one thing complicating into another, all that's not considered. So it's not actually practical. It's niti for getting something done immediately, and niti is for practically getting something done. Niti is the law of the pragmatist. But the point of this niti is not based on dharma. Then it won't have any long-term effect. That's why you see your nitiists, they're always destroyed before the dharmists. You know what I'm saying? Duryodhana used niti. It worked immediately. He got control of the kingdom, he got rid of the Pandavas, and that, it seemed to work. And it worked for a long, 14 years is not a long, short time on one level. But if you're looking at a whole lifetime, then somehow the 14 years runs out sooner than you think. And then because of the niti...
What's niti? Sorry, I don't understand the word niti.
Niti means just... it's how to get something practically done. It's called ethics. You know, but unfortunately nowadays ethics and morality are confused. Right? It's different than Dharma. See, because we try to give a more noble position to ethics and morality. Ethics simply means what's the proper way of dealing with the thing. But the proper way of dealing with the thing simply for getting your work done. You know what I'm saying? You mean you're nice to Mr. Smith because you want him to do something. If you're not nice, he may not do it, or he'll do it grudgingly, or he may not do a good job. But if I'm nice to Mr. Smith, he does the job. But am I really nice? Do I really care about Mr. Smith? Not at all. Just I know that by dealing nicely, he'll do the work I want. So that's why it's called ethics. It's not Dharma.
Yeah, we call it politics.
It's politics. Yeah, it's politics. That's why it's called political correctness. Mm. Political correctness is just pure, unalloyed politics. It's just using what politics work for the situation, which means whatever is the nicest in the situation. It means, in other words, what's the nicest that you have to use? If you don't have to be nice, you won't be nice. So political correctness is only used when you need to be nice. So how much you need to be nice, that's how much you should be. Not more, not less. You understand? So it's just politics. So we talk about political correctness as if it's something noble, as something grand, and something even we attribute to it religiousness or even spirituality. It's just politics. But the point is politics have a validity. But they are still politics. But because politics sounds bad, it's not politically correct to call political correctness politics. Right? Therefore, we, you know, euphemize it to make it sound good. So because we're devotees, then we will, you know, try to make it look like it's spiritual. You know? Like that. When it's not, it's politics. You can use politics in devotional service, but you're using politics. So it's not that it's a social system in itself. Just because you're politically correct, then we'll think, "Oh, I'm applying myself in the social system in a proper way." No, you're only dealing on the social platform, but it's not a social system. So that's why devotees still don't have a social system, right? Varnashram is a social system. Political correctness is a way of dealing within the social system. Right, so Varnashram includes politics. Right, Dharma, then there's Artha. Right, and from Artha there's Kama. But we won't talk about Artha and Kama because they don't sound good. So we'll talk about as if they're Dharma, but we'll never talk Dharma. You understand? So the difficulty is sub-religion sounds like it's religion. But that's what's called in the Bhagavatam, the second verse, that's called cheating religion. It's not real religion. It may be valuable to use in support of real religion, but you can't not follow real religion, follow this sub-religion, and then call it real religion. That's cheating. You understand? So that's the point, is that since it's just a play on words, then if we analyze it, you know, by the usage of the words, we see it's not actually glorious. Maybe practical, maybe useful, maybe necessary, but it's not glorious. You know what I'm saying? Like cleaning the toilet. It's necessary, but it's not necessarily glorious. You understand? So it's something that needs to be done. You have to speak the proper way in the proper forum with the particular personages you're dealing with. But that's just etiquette, right? So etiquette already includes political correctness, if you understand etiquette properly, because the etiquette is based on the actual nature. So if you understand Dharma, you'll perform Artha and Niti properly. But because you're looking at the big picture, therefore, you see that the immediate result isn't going to be as important as the long term, right? Duryodhana followed Niti to destroy his enemy. And it worked in the beginning. Yudhishthira Maharaj could have acted within Niti, also, exclusively within Niti also, and countered it. Right? And no one would have complained, because someone's using Niti, you counter with Niti. But he used Dharma. So it appears in the beginning that it wasn't very successful. Look at him. He's ended up in the forest. So it wasn't practical. He wasn't being very pragmatic, right? Isn't it? Like that. Duryodhana and Shakuni and that. They're laughing, right? Like that. What's his name? The charitable one?
Karna.
He wasn't very happy about it. Because he says, we're Kshatriyas, we should just fight. You know, why all this politics? Right? So, but they were happy about it. But he respected authority. He dealt according to everything. So even though it created difficulty, in the long run, he got the complete results. Like before it was, he was the emperor of the world, but he had to put up with, you know, relatives that weren't very supportive. Right? So by following Dharma, then he again had emperorship of the world with no relatives to give any problems. Right? In other words, his result was better. You understand? So that's the thing. We think that by following Dharma, that we should get everything on all points, at all places. There should never anything go wrong. But that's not how anything works. Something goes wrong to make it right. It means you go into the kitchen, it's nice and clean, right? Now you start cooking. What happens? It becomes dirty, right? So, but one would say, no, but if cooking was really proper, it wouldn't be. No, it means there's peels and there's water and there's all kinds of stuff, pots to wash and everything, right? But you, if you follow it right, and because cleanliness is part of it, then you will clean as part of the cooking process. And then there'll be, you know, at the end you'll have something cooked and you'll have a clean kitchen. You understand? But otherwise, practically, you just go in there and grab whatever pot, cooking it, throw it wherever you want, get it out of the way. They're there, move them on the side, put them anywhere. And then you finish cooking. You got your preparation. And you may have done it, you know, a few minutes quicker than the other guy who was doing the cleaning. You know, or let's say, not that the cooking went any quicker, but you came in, you know, 2 hours later, you know. You came in 45 minutes before the offering, you know, to do the puris, sabji, pakoras, and chutney, and, no, but the sweet's already made, right? It's on the tray, right? So you did it in 45 minutes, you know, in fact, that the puris, you were running down the hall to put them on the plate before they went in, you know, so it's practical, so you got it done. Well, the other person maybe came in an hour or more earlier, you know, and got everything. But the difference is afterwards, the one looked like a bomb hit the place, right? And now you have to do all that cleaning. So he will spend an hour cleaning, while the other person, and no one likes to just clean, but the other one would have come earlier, he would have done all the things, he would have cooked and cleaned at the same time. So it's very sattvic. The other one was much more, had the element of rajas to it. That's why there's a discomfiture. Or you could even say ignorance, because on this... does that make sense? So this is the difference between Dharma and Niti. They both get the work done, but the one addresses the problems and actually deals with them, while Niti, you address directly the problem, but not anything else. You don't tolerate that there's any problems. Dharma, you have to acknowledge that there are problems. Right? So deadly tendency is we look to religion to get rid of all problems. There should be no problem at all, right? You know, if you think about it, whenever there's these utopian ideas, right, there's no problem at all. Nothing. You know, it's just, you just sit back, it automatically just takes care of itself. Like that. Does that make sense? But that's not realistic. Because the point is for something to be good, then there must be the inverse of it. You know, does that make sense? For something to be clean means that you had to get rid of the dirty. Right? Something's clean because you're always attentive that there's no dirt. So if you regularly clean, then there is no dirt. Right? Means if you dust your house every day, there is no dust. But if you don't, then at the end of the week, there's a lot of dust. Hmm? Those little dust balls there growling underneath, you know.
I took care of them yesterday.
nipping at your ankles and stuff like that. Yeah.
To use the example of serving prasadam,
yes.
See that it's considered more practical to serve buffet style rather than full service.
Yes.
I've heard that during festivals, sometimes even the brahmacharis or whatever servers don't have the physical strength or the endurance to bend over and serve all the prasad, so that system has been done away with in a lot of...
Yeah, so then you have others do. It means the ones who have eaten, now they serve. But the idea is, once you've been served, now, you know, you've attained your godness, so now you don't do any service to anybody else. You know what I'm saying? Because actually who's supposed to serve are the senior devotees, not the junior. Junior don't have the qualification to serve prasad, because they don't understand what is prasad and what are Vaishnavas. So actually they don't have the qualification. But we always relegate it, because serving prasad is, you know, one of those low-end, you know, dead-end, you know, like flipping burgers at McDonald's or something, you know, one of those kind of dead-end services. But it's actually, it's a Bhagavad service. It's a top service. It's part of the Pancharatric system. So technically, seeing that it's part of the Pancharatric system, only second initiated devotees technically are supposed to serve prasad, according to the Gaudiya tradition. Mm. You know what I'm saying? If you have a mixed group. You know, if you only have new bhaktas, then amongst themselves they'll serve, of course. But if you have a group of all these, technically only second initiated devotees are supposed to serve. And that would naturally be second initiating good standing. You know, that they're qualified because they actually appreciate the spiritual aspect, elements of prasad, cleanliness, you know, Vaishnavas, they're sensitive so they'll know who needs what. The reason prasad serving doesn't go nice is because you have people that don't really care serving. You know what I'm saying? The persons who like to serve prasad, then they don't. It means like you had, not Krishna Das. Yeah, it was Krishna Das, probably. No. It wasn't Krishna Das. Can't even remember his name now. He was a brahmachari, but he was like 70 years old or something. 80 years old, but they called him Maharaj. I can't remember what his name was. But he would always come prepare, cook, serve prasad, clean everything, and then after that take prasad. You know what I'm saying? So the brahmacharis are there. How many brahmacharis are there? How many serve prasad? 15, 20 serve prasad. How many are there? Especially at a festival. 300, 600? So why can't they rotate? You know, one batch is served by one group of brahmacharis, and then the next batch they sit and then those ones serve and stuff like that. So it's just a matter of not wanting to. It's not a matter of practical. It's a matter of no one wants to serve prasad. That's the bottom line. They can say, oh, but this and that. No, okay, if you're too old, you can't bend over, don't serve prasad. But that's no. There's plenty who can. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? How many are living in the old brahmachari building?
40, 50.
Yeah, and how many brahmacharis are there?
350.
Yeah. So those 50, okay, they don't serve prasad. But they could be supervising it. They could be seeing that it's going properly. Because you don't have to bend over. You just walk around and see that it's going on nicely. So you have a line, so you have at least one if not two, per, you know, one of those little channel things. Like that. And there's like how many of those? You know, eight of those. So, you know, 14, 15, 16, maybe even 20 are there because someone has seen it's coming out of the kitchen, someone is organized there, someone's like, you know, like that, or that's it, somebody's there and somebody's on the lines. And then you have all the new boys serving. You know what I'm saying? So that's because that's the science of it. That's the devotional aspect of it. But it's not being appreciated because management, collecting money, things like this is more important. No, those are to organize things like devotional service. You know what I'm saying? Collecting money is devotional service only because the money gets used in devotional service. The actual collection is not. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? It's indirect. Serving prasad is directly devotion. It's direct Bhagavad collecting money is not a Bhagavad activity. It's a Vedic activity. It's not even Pancharatra. Do you understand? It's Vedic. But you're using it in Krishna's service. Therefore, it's non-different. But the priority, you have to know the priority. Like what's more important, the pot or what's in the pot? You can't cook the preparation without the pot, so you can say the pot's the most important. You know what I'm saying? But just because you have a pot doesn't mean you have a preparation. But even though the pot is very prominent, the pot has no meaning without the subject. So in the same way as even though money is so prominent and important and necessary, it's still secondary to the activities it supports. So prasad and prasad seva, serving it, that is directly Bhagavat. Worshipping the deity is directly Bhagavat. Distributing the book, not the collection of the money, is directly Bhagavat. Right? Right? From Dharma comes Artha. That's why you get money from book distribution. You're saying chanting, associating with Vaishnava, these are direct. So these five main direct activities are superior to any other activity. Everything else is in support of that. Or a detail of that. Does that make sense? Buffet is only useful when, instead of everybody being able to sit at one time, they're going to be coming at all different times over so many hours and hours, and there's no space for everyone to sit down. So therefore, people have to move around and find a place. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, some are sitting outside, some are sitting inside, some are sitting over in the garden, some are sitting, you know, over there on this side, some are sitting in the back, some are sitting on a step somewhere. Then the buffet becomes useful only because you can't serve the other way. You understand? But if we notice when it's just the brahmacharis, you know, there's only whatever it is, you know, 50, 60, they sit down and serve. But only when there's a festival, then they use the buffet. You understand? But when you have a building that's dedicated to cooking and serving prasad, you have the place, you have the facility, and everybody is there basically at one shot. So there is absolutely no reason for a buffet. It's only laziness. Lack of understanding of our culture. You know? That's all. It has nothing to do with their backs can't handle it. Has nothing to do with that. Because you go to any one of those brahmacharis' houses, and their grandmother is permanently in a 90-degree bend. She's still serving prasad. Why? Because she knows how to do it. The young girls don't do it. Why? They're not as expert. So it's just a combination of laziness, which is ignorance, and a sense of superiority that they're seniors. So that combination, being from the mode of ignorance, then is detrimental to the devotional process. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So it's not a matter of, I don't know. You know, one may say, well, who am I to say? But the thing is, I've been organizing prasad service here in Mayapur since 76. And that means for the GBC. You know, just the other day we had a festival. We cooked for it and served after cooking. Right? And at the end, we took prasad. You know, so what's the problem? You know what I'm saying? So it's in this one area we can speak as strongly as we are. And we'll say, it boils down to lack of knowledge, lack of culture, lack of philosophical understanding. That's all. There is absolutely no other reason. Here in Mayapur, where they got it from, I have no problem if they use it. But they use it here, it has absolutely no meaning. It comes from a Western thing where generally people stand around and eat while they're standing, because it's supposed to be snacks, it's not meals. the people who invented it, it's I think it's called sandwiches. That's the meaning of the whole thing. Yeah. So they come around, they stand, and they stand around, but according to Shastra, only Shudras eat standing up. So therefore, then we're going to trade that, which is meant for Shudras standing up, eating a snack, and we're going to turn it into Vaishnavs eating a full meal and sitting down. You know, if everybody's going to come out of a meeting, sit around, get something, eat something, and go back into the meeting, I won't complain about buffet at all. Not one bit. But if they're going to sit down, then why can't they be served? Does that make sense? So this is the whole point, is that we're trying to find what is the devotional element and what's not. You know, because in here, to be able to say, you're not putting anyone into difficulty means you're not putting them into the difficulty. They put themselves into difficulty. What can you do? You try to avoid that. And even if you see that they're going to find difficulty in your dealings, you try to avoid that by dealing in such a way to, you know, circumvent that. But if still they become disturbed, what can you do? Does that make sense? But you have to discern what's what. Because in here, we're not discerning. We're saying it's pragmatic, but it's only niti. The point is they don't want to serve prasad. You know what I'm saying? Because serving prasad takes organization, takes management, takes skill. Sitting behind a buffet and just taking a spoon and putting on some plate, basically any new bhakta can do it. So in other words, you divine the system is that it's meant for senior devotees to serve, the Vaishnava system. But because the senior devotees don't want to serve and the new bhaktas are serving, but because they're not good at it, therefore the buffet system is something that they can do and be efficient at it. Right? Because it means, in other words, the system is made up by malechas, so therefore anybody could use it. Right? The Vedic system is meant for, you know, those who follow Brahminical culture. Does that make sense? Right? So therefore, it's pragmatic. But the purpose is not serving Vaishnavas. The point is just to eat. And to eat without any difficulty. Right? He by whom one never puts one's own self into difficulty. Right? That's the inverse of what it says here. And who is disturbed by everyone. You understand? So in other words, we're reversing. So when we reverse these things, what does that mean? It's a mode of ignorance. That's what it says. When religion becomes irreligion, irreligion becomes religion. So proper service of Bishad becomes irreligion because it's not practical. Because religion means what is the nature of something. Right? Does that make sense? And irreligion becomes the standard. Does that make sense? So it's not that it's buffet against a service. That's not the point. The point is the principle on which it's based. Why is one being picked over the other? They say the backs, but as we said, how many serve? You know, and rotate. What's wrong with that? Oh, there's so many services. Then don't have prasad. Let everybody, you know, do their own thing. Just, you know, encourage restaurants. You know, and then everybody can focus on the main things, that this important works that they're doing. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So why take something up and do it wrong? Does that make sense? You know, it's like, how is it this other service, since it is a direct Bhagavad activity, what could be more important? It's not that they're chanting. It's not that they're studying Bhagavatam. It's not that they're worshipping the deity. You know what I'm saying? It's not that they're out on book distribution, because they're here. Right? When they're out on book distribution, there's five of them. There's no buffet. You know? You understand? So the whole point is it's direct. Why would it go? That's the problem. You understand? The form is not the problem. The application that form is being used in this situation, that's the problem. You know what I'm saying? That we're using a hammer to prepare the cauliflowers for the sabji. Is there a problem with the hammer? Is the hammer bad? No, it's fine. It's used meant for nails. You know? It's not meant for cauliflowers. Right? So the buffet isn't the problem. Some will take, oh, it's not Vedic and this. No, it's not a matter of that. The others, oh, it's not Vedic. No, we're just being practical. No, it's a matter of, it's the wrong thing for the situation. It's not practical. Because in doing it, you lose so much culture. Yes?
Maharaj, what about management devotees who have established preaching centers internationally? And so you've got something like Govinda's restaurant. Shouldn't we be embracing this method as well? This
if you can, if you have the people and facilities, but if there's three of you and there's, you know, so many people eating and you've got just a couple of preps, then you do whatever you need to do. You understand me? In other words, what we're saying is then there are situations that might be practical. You know what I'm saying? But in situations here, what he's quoting, it's not necessarily. You know what I'm saying? In other words, being Lord Chaitanya's place, why not try for, you know, the example, you know? Lord Chaitanya went to Sri Prashad after Haridas Thakur's. They all sat in lines. Krishna, you know, Bosi Sari Sari, I mean, we sing it every day. You know, it's they all sit in lines. Why would it mention? They would just say Krishna sat with his friends and ate prashad and he ate this and he ate that. You know, why do you even get into the detail? You know, because no one's in the cooking. You just say Krishna sat, you know, Krishna ate with his friends. So we don't even have to get into sitting part. Right? You know, he just ate with his friends. But it gets into it. They sat in lines. Right? What they ate, you know, what was the order of what they ate, that they got up, stood in line, and washed their hands and mouth and feet. All that is said in the song. Why would that be said? Unless it's something special. You know what I'm saying? The Shastras mention, even when Radharani brushes her teeth, it tells how she brushes her teeth and how she spits the water. Why? Because these have some meaning.
And I guess the two aspects that we need to consider as well, if we're to implement something like this, is that you will need the training and also the qualifications.
Qualifications means you care for the other person. In other words, let us say, okay, the prashad is there, you go and just get in the line and get some prashad, sit down and eat. You'll appreciate the prashad. So as far as the spiritual aspect of taking prashad, whether you serve it in lines or serve it as buffet, you still get the same spiritual benefit. You know what I'm saying? So, but the point is the Vaishnava interaction is missing, and especially in a day and age when Vaishnava, the association, the community, and it's all this kind of thing is are all the buzzwords. Here's a major one that then it's just overlooked. So how much buzz is going on? It's no buzz. You know what I'm saying? It's not happening. So the point is you can sit down and appreciate the prashad, and you get the spiritual benefit. But if I'm serving you and seeing that you're getting what you want and trying to ask of this and that and so many things, then the relationship develops. Plus, there's the thing, you've gotten up. Now, you have to get up to go there. What happens if you want a little bit more, but the trouble to get up and get it is more than that little more you want? So you're not going to get up and get it.
I've told you when you get up, someone sits in your seat and you come back.
Yes, something like that. So, that's a good point. Right?
It interrupts the whole digestion.
The point is, according to Ayurveda, you're never supposed to get up when you eat. That's why someone's sitting to eat, you don't get them up. So if you're managing it, be better manager. Next time, don't let them sit down. if they're not supposed to sit there, manage that they don't sit there, they sit where they're supposed to sit. You know what I'm saying? So the whole idea is that it disrupts all these things. These things we don't know. We just take them as, it doesn't matter because you know, you go up to the window, you order something, you stand there and eat it, you know, because if they have seats, then there's a tax, because then you're a restaurant, but if they don't, you know, you sell stuff, but there's no place to sit. The taxes are less than if they actually have a place to sit. So a lot of places don't have places to sit, so you just sit there, and you stand there, and you know what I'm saying? Or they can have a few seats outside, but those are benches outside, like the garden, so then you can go sit out there. Problem is, when you get up, someone takes a seat, right? all these elements are there as part of the culture. You'll appreciate it more. You know, there's the Vaishnava interaction. That's why it's, say, Bhunkte Bo Jayate. And sitting there behind the thing and giving something. You can make the best of it you can and be pleasant and nice and try to give how much they want, and they want, pay attention. So you can bring it to its best, but it's still not the same as when they come to you. You know? You have to go to them, it's one thing. They come to you, it's another thing.
Another point is that it interrupts the conversation two people are having when they're taking. It's like, just wait a second, I have to go.
Yeah.
So that same.
Yeah, or you have to wait until they finish and get up together. So at least the etiquette of while the other person's eating, you don't get up, is maintained. But it's only maintained only for practicalness. You know, it's not. It's you know what I'm saying. It's elements are there, so you'll appreciate it. That'll be better because that's an element of actual taking prasad. Yeah, it's all a disturbance.
So just being practical inherently actually means being inconsiderate.
Being practical does have an element of being inconsiderate. Niti is famous for being inconsiderate.
So it's from the mode of ignorance.
Yeah, so that's why the Shastra, when it describes Niti, it's trying to describe it in line with Dharma, so you get practically done and you don't disturb the overall. But at the same time, you can apply it on a more closed circle.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? In other words, it's appropriate, it's based on Dharma, but there are maybe dharmic considerations that would slow down the process.
Mm.
You know? As we said, it means Duryodhana got the empire in one gambling match. Well, actually, it took him two. Right? So you're talking about a few hours. But Yudhishthira took 14 years. But the point is Yudhishthira's, it's an unrivaled kingdom. You know, he has full support. Duryodhana doesn't have full support. Yeah.
I'll clarify. You're describing a hierarchy of activities, Pancharashtra-Vedic, and a hierarchy of consciousness in which those activities can be performed. And they can be mixed, like for example.
Yeah, you can mix them, yes.
Yeah. So how would you describe that hierarchy of consciousness? What's the organization of those?
Means anamoya is your the sensuality, that's
right.
The lowest. Extended sensuality, that's pranamoya, means where you care for others, life in general. So it means that, means of the, means the sensual means it's everything is done through sense perception. Your knowledge is gained through there, and it's defined by the sensual engagement.
Right.
Extended sense gratification means defined by others' engagement of their senses. So it can be to a specific group or to, you know, just life. You know what I'm saying? You see those who are very considerate of others, but only a specific group.
Right.
Like you have a suit on, they're considerate. You don't have a suit on, they don't care.
That's what I mean. So ideally there should be a correspondence between the top consciousness, Anandamoy, should be performing the Bhagavad, not, you know, Anandamoy.
Yes, means it would be, that would be, that's where mixed means. So when we say mixed devotional service, it means Anandamaya is being mixed with Dharma, Artha, and Kama, Moksha. Right? Means as a primary element. Right? Means ultimately it's secondary, but in the application it's primary. That's, or you're doing it because of your interest in Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. So the idea is that Anandamaya means the service to the Lord is the prominent. And then you're engaging Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. Point is these four activities, these are the activities of of human life. You know what I'm saying? You're performing an activity according to your nature. Right? So that's dharma. It will give a result. So you deal judiciously with that result. You know, and see that others get benefit from that. You also get benefit from that. Right? But ultimately, that whole process of endeavoring and being involved is being done without a desire for a result for yourself. So in other words, you're performing activities of your nature without desiring the result, right? And the result is being used in sacrifice for the benefit of others, so Krishna and the Vaishnavas. Sound like devotional service? Right? That's a clear definition of devotional service. So performing your activity, dharma, without an attachment to the result, moksha, right? For the benefit, for sacrifice for others, right? That's artha. And for your benefit for yourself, karma. But it's all being seen in connection with devotional service. So therefore, dharma, artha, karma, moksha is not called that. It's called devotional service. It's just angas of bhakti. It's when they're separated, often they're not angas of bhakti, then they're called dharma, artha, karma, moksha. Right? Just like engaging the senses in the Lord's service is devotion. Engaging the senses not in the Lord's service is called sense gratification. Right? So that's karma. Engaging the intelligence and mind in contemplating philosophy connected to the Lord is called vichar. Not connected to the Lord is called mental speculation. You understand? So all the items that we give names to that we will say are non-devotional, they have those names only because they're not connected to the Lord. They're connected to the Lord. We don't separately define them. Right? They're just part of the devotional process. Right? Because if it's part of the Lord, then it has its place. But if it's not part of the Lord, it becomes exaggerated. So, does that make sense? Someone has a motorcycle, they ride it to the, to work and back. Do you call them a bikie? No. But when the motorcycle itself is so important to them, then they're a bikie. You know? And then the question is, why they're going to work? Right. Bikers can go to work, but not bikies. Right? I understand. Does that make sense? And then you have weekend warriors. Does this make sense? What is emphasized, then it gets a title. Mm. Right? If it's not emphasized, if it's in a balance, it's not given a title. Mm. You know what I'm saying? The cook can cut sabji and wash pots. But if all you do is wash pots, you're a kitchen cleaner. Or if you cut sabji and that's all you do, you're a kitchen assistant. Right? Does that make sense? The good cook is knows how to eat. Otherwise, how will he cook? Right? But you don't call the good cook a connoisseur. Right? The person who eats, you call a connoisseur. You understand? So it's a matter of where the emphasis is. Does that make sense? Okay. So now after that preliminary talk just on the verse, now we get to the kernel. By Krishna's mercy, one becomes dear to Krishna. No one is put into difficulty, anxiety, fearfulness, or dissatisfaction by such a devotee. Right? So difficulty means there's some problem. Anxiety that they're perceived will be a problem, or some problems already come up. Fearfulness because there'll be a loss in their position and everything because you're moving in on them, or you're doing something, or you say something that breaks down their identity of themselves. Because that's another thing. If someone's confident, then what do? You say something to unnerve them. Right? Right? So difficulty, you're trying to take what they're taking. Right? The anxiety caused by that, fearfulness of losing their position, dissatisfaction because the dealing, they weren't satisfied in the interaction. Right? So any of those. You may have done everything nicely, but they're dissatisfied. Right? Or you're dealing nicely, but you're making them fearful. You're dealing nicely, but you're about to take away their position.
Right, in that situation where you may have disturbed someone, you make a decision, is it you just explain the situation as best as possible to them, and then if they're disturbed, then...
Explanation is one thing, but is what you're doing according to authority, that's what should be done at that time?
Well, let's say yes.
Okay, so then you explain the best you can, and then you try. It's not that you've explained it and that's it. If you can continue to try to, then you work with it, try to make them comfortable. Then they're satisfied.
But if they're not satisfied,
what can you do? It means that if there's opportunity to continue working at it, you do. If not, then you don't. Like that. Does that make sense? Since a devotee is kind to everyone, he does not act in such a way as to put others in anxiety, right? Because he's kind. It doesn't mean that he doesn't get done what he needs to get done, but he's kind. Because much of the time there is other ways to get something done. It just takes a little longer, it's a little more effort, right? But because of pragmatism, we won't make that extra effort, right? Because, you understand? Because pragmatic is valued. It's an important aspect. The pragmatism being the prominent only element is technically only the idea of the Vaishya, right? Because it's just a matter of what you have to do to get profit. Because you get maximum profit when there's the least amount of investment, right? So if I use the shortest possible method to apply it, it's less investment, so that means more profit. Does that make sense? Like that. So pragmatism is very important for Vaishyas. That's why the Vaishya is encouraged to work according to Dharma, but their actual field is Artha. Right? And they'll have a tendency to sometimes, if Dharma is in line with Artha, then great. To them, it's double profit. You got your profit, plus you're considered religious. You know, it's just like, I'm going to, let's say the government's going to take $100,000 anyway. I'm going to lose it anyway, in tax. And nobody will know, except some guy sitting in some little office somewhere that I don't want to know, and he doesn't want to know me. But now, if I give that $100,000 away in charity, that's a big donation. You know, there'll be pictures, there'll be photographs, there'll be, you know, those big 6-foot checks, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I'll be a great guy, and I'm, you know, the supporter of this and that and that. So I make double profit. You understand? So that way, then, the tendency is there. That's why Dharma is there. The Kshatriya Dharma is their situation. So in other words, if you see an administrator that is not considerate of social structure, right? And practical is superior to social structure. You're not dealing with a Kshatriya. Or you're dealing with a very untrained, low-grade Kshatriya mentality. Then the influence becomes more important. So in other words, you have to check. Is the profit, what's most important? Profit or the influence? So if it's profit, then they shouldn't be doing that. If it's influence, they need training. Does that make sense? At the same time, if others try to put a devotee into anxiety, he is not disturbed, right? Because the modes of nature stuff, it happens. Due to either the modes of nature, just by how they work, sometimes it's nice, sometimes it's not. So even if they're not planning, it happens. But even if they're controlled by the modes and they're planning to give you a problem, then you're not disturbed because you know it's just the modes. It's not the soul. The soul is pure. The soul couldn't care less about fighting over a position or, you know, power or money or facility. Right? Because it's all Krishna's. It's all for Krishna anyway. So it's the conditioning that's fighting. The conditioning is the modes of nature. Right? You understand? So here, both things, because the one will say, not put others in the difficulty. If we're just practical management, well, all of this is very sentimental. We have to be practical. But let's say we're a little bit more enlightened. So we'll say, yes, yes, it's good like that. But then when we get to this, we're not disturbed by others. Mm. Then we'll say, well, this is theoretical. Mm. Right? Unless one is quite, you know, saintly. Then one will try that. But then, you know, how many of those are there? You know what I'm saying? In the Western paradigm, how many are that's not disturbed by others? I mean, this comes to mind, Francis of Assisi, okay? Anyone else?
Jesus.
Huh?
Jesus.
Yeah, okay, Jesus. Two. Are we going to make one handful here? No, okay. So that's the thing, is that will be kept for, that's really not practical. It's nice, it's glorious, but not at all practical. But trying to be nice to others is okay. But generally tendency is they may be nice, but not practical. Mm-hmm. So the guys that are practical are not nice.
Nice guys finish last.
Yes, nice guys finish last. So, in a sense, so here it is that no, all of these have to be applied. You don't disturb others, they don't disturb you. That's the actually most practical, because if you're not disturbed, you always work nicely, right? Just like you're going along, you could do it. You could. Let's say there is something going on in the meeting, there's discussions, and there's something that's putting your position in jeopardy, right? And so you make your presentation, they're making their presentation, right? But, you know, maybe you followed the thing that you, okay, tried to do it in such a way not to bother them. But they don't have any problem in saying something that'll bother you. So now, the point is what they've said, it's just to bother you. It doesn't actually have any substance. So therefore, the people who are making the decision, since it doesn't bother them, they're still using their intelligence. Right? But because it bothered you so much emotionally and the others just sat there while they said it, then you storm out of the room and say, you know, I'm out of here and I'm not doing this. So then the other guy gets it. Well, if you weren't bothered, you could have just said no, but that's this and that. What's that got to do with this? You know? And so then the others go, right. And so then they would be dropped. Right? And if you don't bother others, then it may be slower to get something done. But the point is you get it done, the other person that you worked with is not going to bother you. You understand? While if you disturb him to get done what you want, he's going to be disturbing you all the way through. And even after he gets his position, he'll still bother you. You understand? So as far as pragmatism, Krishna means just material, this is better. But the reason is because everybody's a devotee. All souls are servants of Krishna. So Krishna doesn't want us to bother other souls and are trying to elevate ourselves, because we are going to be dealing with our conditioning, and we have to deal with, you know, occupations, you know, and ashram. So all these things, we have to work with others. So we shouldn't disturb anybody in that process, because they're also devotees. Yes?
But it seems like it may slow, not slow, but pushes you to work on a lower profile.
Lower profile.
At least in the beginning, practice in that.
So is working on a lower profile a problem?
It depends how you look at it.
Depends, no, but how we look at it, but in practically getting it done.
It is a problem.
It is a problem.
Because
why would it be a problem?
Low profile means that you can accomplish much less.
No, but why does a profile... No, I'm just saying, to analyze it, why does a profile... What is the efficient element of a profile? You're saying that if you work on a lower profile... Then
less people involved, less things involved, so less possibility to disturb.
Oh, so your profile here means
yeah.
You don't mean attitude or
no.
Show, you mean
no.
But it can be that you could still work with as many people and as much facility, just you move it slower. It may mean you're working with less, it may mean you work slower.
So what's more important, to implement this principle or to get things done for the mission, let's say.
But what is the mission? Let's get it done for the mission. Okay. Squeeze that under the wire.
Saving.
Okay. What's the mission made of?
Devotees.
Okay. So are devotees therefore important?
Very much.
Okay. So is the is the mission more important than the individual? You know what I'm saying? Or is the mission to engage the individual? Right? So of course you do have the principle of you can sacrifice a member of the family for the family like this. But at the same time as you have the ultimate point, you can sacrifice the whole world. So that means the spiritual element is the highest. Right? So there is the element of, okay, it would be good for everything spiritually, but for one person it may be a difficulty. But that doesn't mean you don't try to work something out for them. Maybe it won't be in that situation something else, right? So the element of the mission, or in this case, because we're looking at it, generally when we look at political things, we don't look at so much mission. The state being the superior thing, that was something created by... I'm not sure if he did it directly himself or he did it with the help of others, but it was Louis XIV established that. You know what I'm saying? Because before that, you had the king. The king was the state, so there wasn't a state. But with Louis, then he made the state. He was the king of the state, but he's the first citizen. But he could be a first citizen as a king. Now you have to be, you know, a first citizen as a president or a prime minister or a chancellor. You can't be as a king anymore. So much. I mean, some do it, but it doesn't work as well.
I am the
same. Yes. Yeah, like that. You know.
Augustine in Rome, after Caesar came to Augustine, he had the same system. He was like a first citizen, but basically he ruled over the...
Yeah. I mean, it works if you can do it. Someone like him can do it. That's why you remember him, and you don't remember many others after him. Because after him, it only went for another, I think, 400 or 500 years, like that. Well, the East Empire lasted another 1,500 years. You know, so the difficulty is that the state takes on a life of its own. Well, the state is only meant to support the people, but what happens? The state takes on preference over the people. So if it's seemingly good for the people, then it doesn't matter what happens to the individual. So yeah, of course you have to make a balance. You know, it's not this or that. But the problem is it overemphasizes the state. Does that make sense? So you overemphasize the mission. You know what I'm saying? But who defines the mission? Because these are, Krishna defines the mission. Rupa Goswami defines the mission. Right? We don't define the mission. We take part and we try to practically apply the mission in the particular situation we're in. So the thing is in the, you have the long term. Okay, the temple president did get a lot done in the festivals and all that, but he only has, you know, 5 brahmacharis in the temple and 300 live outside. Right? And those 300 aren't supported. They don't give money. They show up for some of them show up for major festivals, basically for prasad. And a few of them come for, you know, this and that, but out of the 300, it's not many. You know, does that make sense? I can speak of one place of 1,530 would show up as a regular. I've heard now it's up to 50. You know, so that means it's the proportion's not great. So was it practical? You got it done now. We had a great festival, but next year no one wants to take part in any festival. So was it actually good? That's the point. You know what I'm saying? So. Therefore, the profile only has a value if it's through profile people will appreciate. You know what I'm saying? It means if you show up at the job interview in a Mercedes, it may take you more seriously than you show up in a Polsky Fiat. Right? You know, that's the only reason to show up in the Mercedes. It's not that you are the Mercedes, you know, like what he said. Yeah, so.
They say that's what ahamkar means.
Yeah.
Ahamkar.
What was the first thing? And this car. Yes.
You're talking about the mission and the individual. Could we see it in the light of the masculine and feminine? As you mentioned?
Yeah. Yeah, means yes, you would say that. It means that the mission would be the masculine, but the individual is the feminine. So that means the masculine acts in such a way that the feminine is engaged. Right? So, of course, the mission is more important. You can't sacrifice the mission, but that doesn't mean that who decides where is the importance lie. So just saying it was practical, is that actually authority? You understand? The point is you could have done something else. Yeah, but that would have taken so long. You know, so some can appreciate that there is other methods and they might have some benefits, but it's just too much. So there's impatience. They want immediate. And then because you do this, you can get so many things done. No, but the point is better a little bit done than, you know what I'm saying? It gets somewhere, because then that part's done. Because otherwise, you keep doing, but it's nothing's ever done. You're moving through, but then it's like how Prabhupada explained to Alexander. He conquers one place. When he moves to the next place, then the old regime just comes back up and they're running again like they were before. So you could say he conquered the whole of, you know, the Middle East, the Central Asia, but at the same time as he didn't have control of any of it. So when he came back the other way, he has to conquer again. You know, so you could say it's definitely he was, you know.
And we can see that in many Eastern centers, right? It flourishes and then it goes down and you have to flourish it again.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's it. But you also have the element of just the natural degrading element that's there from being in the material world. So you always have to reestablish. So that don't mix it with that. What we're saying here is that means you follow a plan that gets an immediate benefit, but then, you know, in other words, the festival went well, but then the day after the festival, no one wants anything to do with anything. But if the festival went well, people are engaged, it took longer to set up. And in other words, you couldn't have just done it yourself. It means if you did it yourself, then, you know, you put in, you know, a little bit of time, this and that. And most things get done. Some things 90%, some things 80%, some things 60%. You know. But you know, so the festival did run, but if you worked with everyone else, you'd have to have more meetings, start earlier, do all these different things, engage people according to their expertise. You might even have to listen to them because they know more than you in the area. That's always the problem, right? So all these different things. Then having done that, the festival come off well, everybody would be very satisfied, everybody's inspired to continue working with the president and in that environment. Because now there's the next festival, or some of those things you can always do. They made nice decorations for the deities. Well, hey, why don't they get into the outfits for the deities? Or, you know, the daily, just, you know, who does the vases and stuff? Or, you know what I'm saying? Prasad distribution. What about, you know, the quality of prasad for the devotees? Or, you know what I'm saying? You could, and so then that would be better. It was way more trouble, but the effect was way greater. You know what I'm saying? And if, you know, nobody wants to work, you're on your own, then you work on your own. That's another thing. We're not discussing that. We're saying when there is opportunity to do something more, and one does something simpler because it's more practical, it doesn't get a long-term result. Does that make sense? So in other words, why we're discussing that, because we may put other people into difficulty by our pragmatism. Or we will be disturbed by others because of our pragmatism. They're getting in their way. But the point is we're not disturbed either. We don't disturb, we're not disturbed. You know, so I'm just bringing out a way of that. Otherwise, there's also the whole, you know, political thing and, you know, gossip and, you know, whole social interaction that we can put others into difficulty and they us. Does that make sense? Yeah. It is by the grace of the Lord that he is so practiced that he is not disturbed by any outward disturbance. So it is by the grace of the Lord he's so practiced. It means he didn't have it in the beginning. He developed it. But it's by the grace of the Lord that we're able to realize it. Right? So practiced means now realization is there. Actually, because the devotee is always engrossed in Krishna consciousness and engaged in devotional service, such material circumstances cannot move him. Because he's always absorbed in Krishna, so therefore seeing it in all relationship with Krishna. Right? Then the circumstances won't bother him. Does that make sense? So we see here, there's the element of automatic. The same time as automatic, you know what's going on. And so if you are engrossed in Krishna consciousness, engaged in devotional service, then this quality of not disturbing others and not being disturbed will come automatically. Right? So therefore you know these things, it comes so much easier. You don't know, just with time it'll happen anyway. If you're always absorbed, it'll happen anyway, even if you don't understand it. A devotee who is always transcendental to all these disturbances is very dear to Krishna. Why? Why would he be very dear to Krishna? Just because he's unmoved, and so he just kind of floats around in a state of, you know, looking undisturbed, you know. Is that what Krishna really likes, the look? You know, okay, you know, take the cigarette out of the mouth. You know what I'm saying? And then
he can engage in service.
He engages in service. He's always engaged in service, but that's for himself. But what makes him very, that's dear to Krishna. What makes him very dear?
Others can also.
Because he's dealing with others, he sees everybody else in relationship to Krishna. So he sees himself in relationship to Krishna, he becomes dear to Krishna. You see everybody else, you become very dear to Krishna. Because then the interaction, the pastimes are there. We finished the lesson. Lesson 33. Of all such devotional practices, the most important are the association of devotees, chanting the holy name of Krishna, living in a sacred place, and worshipping the Archamurti of Krishna. So, okay, and what was the one before? One should practice concentrating mind on Krishna. In other words, following your fault, you're hearing the instruction of means we want to go back to Godhead, but we can only become transcendental by hearing from the Lord. So the Lord comes himself, the Lord sends the devotees. Then in that we hear from a devotee about the Lord's instructions. Right? And then somehow or another apply that in our life. Then when we become more developed, then we try to follow everything in a regulated form. And in that regulated form, it's not the regulation, it's remembering Krishna. Right? But in that remembrance of Krishna and practices, the most important of all the practices, right, means you're doing the activities, the regulation. So of that, remembering Krishna is the most important. And then of the activities, then these are the most important. Association of devotees, chanting the holy name, living in a sacred place, worshipping the Archamurti. Now, also this order has some meaning, right? Why the devotees? We'll say chanting Hare Krishna, but you're not chant, you only chant because of the association of devotees. So it's by the association we've taken up chanting, by the association we continue to chant, by the association we improve the quality of the chant. Then we chant. Then, naturally, we want to be in a place that's close to Krishna, and because we're close to Krishna, we worship Krishna. Right? Why is the sacred place sacred? Because Krishna lives there. So therefore, then we worship the deity. Does that make sense? So therefore, association of devotees is the most important. That's why we were making the point before. Serving the prasad, the buffet, may be practical, but the association of devotees, what you could gain from it that is afforded by prasad, is lost. You understand? Does that make sense? Let's say you take... How do you make a... What's the quickest way to make friends with an animal?
Feed
it. Right? So how powerful is that? So that means in the association of devotees, the distribution of prasad, you know, is so powerful in developing relationships. Right? If it's just there in the bucket and, you know, you get it yourself, where's the development? You could say, no, but we sit and talk with devotees. But that's part of it. But then what about the part of caring? Because we're all saying, oh, nobody cares. Yeah, nobody cares. That's why they do the buffet. If they cared, they wouldn't do buffet. Yeah, exactly. So oh, these elements are there. Does that make sense? Right? So, we've regulated the life, we're following all the activities. In those activities, you're trying to remember Krishna. In remembering Krishna, we're not neglecting everyone else in the process. And of all these processes, these are the main. Right? Does anybody catch something here in this? Yes. Yeah, no, that's what I was going to say. There's no mention of the fifth.
Yes, it is.
Because what happens when you're association of devotees?
The footnote.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm just saying, in these four, what do you do in the association of devotees? Discuss Krishna. So that's the Bhagavatam. That's why sometimes it's mentioned hearing Bhagavatam in the association of devotees. They're put as one, and then worshipping Tulsi is brought out. But if you worship the deity, you worship Tulsi, because it's part of the process. It means in the Archa program, you're supposed to worship Tulsi. Right? Because you're already chanting, you're already like that. Prasad is also, it doesn't mention Prasad, but that also comes with the Archa Murti. Right? Is that? Okay, so this is... What's the 50?
That's the footnote. In the Association of Devotees, one will hear from...
Oh, it's a very big footnote. Okay. In the Association of Devotees, one will hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay. 438. In this world, there is nothing so sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge. Such knowledge is the mature fruit of all mysticism. And one who has become accomplished in the practice of devotional service enjoys this knowledge within himself in due course of time. That one who has become accomplished in the practice. Right? So in other words, that was the whole point before, is you're going to hear about those practices from the Lord. Right? That's going to be confirmed and directed by the spiritual master. And having been given by the spiritual master, one's going to see the purpose of following rituals is to serve Krishna, remember Krishna, and the direct activities are the most pure. So now being accomplished in this, one will be able to appreciate this knowledge within himself. He'll be able to, one means he can practice it. It comes like it says. It'll come very naturally. It says here. Oh, yeah, here. It is by the grace of the Lord he is so practiced that he is not disturbed by any outward disturbance. So it's by the grace of the Lord, through his practice, the Lord being pleased, therefore he's able to apply these. So he's enjoying these within himself. Right? Because otherwise you can say, I'm enjoying within myself, but who's the self? So if we're doing things that are envious of ourselves, you can't say we're enjoying within ourselves. We may be enjoying the enviousness of ourselves. But we're not actually joined within the self. Right? Is that what it says? Knowledge culminates in Krishna consciousness. Right? Because that was the whole point, is Krishna gives knowledge through the spiritual master, through the practices. It culminates again back in having that realized knowledge. Before it was you've heard the knowledge. Right? Then you understand the knowledge, then you realize. Right? When we speak of transcendental knowledge, we do so in terms of spiritual understanding. Right? Because the knowledge itself doesn't have importance unless it gives spiritual understanding. As such, there's nothing so sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge. Ignorance is the cause of our bondage. And knowledge is the cause of our liberation. This knowledge is the mature fruit of devotional service. And when one is situated in transcendental knowledge, he need not search for peace elsewhere. It's the mature fruit of devotional service. That means knowledge will come by mature devotional service, not other things. That comes by just practice. You become good at a skill. You know, and by Krishna's grace, you're blessed with that skill. But it's the knowledge that comes with it. Right? Does that make sense? That doesn't necessarily mean they have technical book knowledge. He didn't know so many shlokas, or that may not. But scholar means that he knows Krishna. So Krishna is knowledge. So knowing, have understand, not means you know Krishna. So they can explain Krishna, because they understand. Does that make sense? It means if you are associated with somebody and someone else asks you about them, you can say so many things. So it's not that this is gained through academic study. It's gained through, how you say, practice. Does that make sense? So one may have the ability to have so much knowledge also, technical knowledge. But even if one doesn't, it still means that you can still establish the point. Like Gorkhashwarnath Babaji Maharaj is not known for his study. In fact, he's known for not even being able to read. Right? But if he would have a discussion with a scholar, he would be able to make the points that would defeat it. Right? Does that make sense? Because he knows Krishna. And they only know some aspects of Krishna. They may know a lot of aspects, but they don't know how it connects to the Lord, so therefore they're actually ignorant. But the difficulty is he would generally tend to not get in such. One, why waste your time? And two, is because the scholars themselves wouldn't appreciate it because it's presented so simply. Mm. They wouldn't want all their nice fancy language and words like that. Therefore, he would send Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur because he could talk their language, so they couldn't complain that he wasn't studied. Yes.
Some definitions of Uttama Adhikari give that one can defeat others according to Shastra.
Yeah. So that means he is quoting Shastra, but he could take one verse, any verse, and explain it down to the detail, he could defeat anything. You know what I'm saying? But much of the time, scholars require a volume or specific words to feel that you've had a discussion. Like so many times, somebody will come up with something and you'll point something out and they can't see it. So they'll think that what you said is not relevant. So then you have to go in and give examples in their area. And then take them step by step through until you bring them up where they've understood. So you've already technically defeated them. Does that make sense?
They just have to realize it.
They just can't acknowledge what you've said. They can't see it. They're blind to what you've said. So therefore, it's not that they couldn't do that, but it would be so much easier for, in this case, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, because he'll just immediately go and use their language, use their quotes and everything, and then establish it. Well, he could do it, but it would take so much longer, because then you'd have to establish common definitions that they would appreciate. Having established those, then you could slowly take them through. But they wouldn't necessarily appreciate it, because if their ego is too big, they wouldn't appreciate going through technical philosophy in layman's terms. You know, even though technically only a master, you know, of scholarship could do that, because they're experts. That's why they can't do it. You understand? A new person who has some knowledge, you know, can appreciate, you know, just using it in common language or a few fancy words, right? The expert, it has to be only fancy words. But the master can explain it in simple language. Does that make sense? Say it again. Okay, and when one is situated in transcendental knowledge, he need not search for peace elsewhere, for he enjoys peace within himself. So he doesn't have to find a peace, okay, we get this facility, then I'll be peaceful, or this position, or, you know, when I go off with nobody else around and chant, then I'm, no. So he's peaceful within himself, so it doesn't matter where he is. Mm-hmm. He's fine. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, Sukadeva Goswami is walking along. There's a whole crowd around him. You know, like that. But he's happy within himself. You know, Jarabar is having to carry a palanquin. You know, and while he's carrying the palanquin, you know, then there's ants, so he's going around the ants. You know, he's satisfied with himself. You know. So the point is it doesn't matter the situation. That's why, you see, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada, their idea of preaching would go, where is the center? Mm. You know, where is everything happening? Go there. You know what I'm saying? You know, the uptown, you know, so there is quiet. You have established people, you know, have money, and have some extra time. So then they use a little, you know, for yoga and that, and like hearing a little bit of this and that, a little bit of Eastern, you know, exposure to the Eastern flow. Nice, you know, it sounds good, you know, peaceful like that. But you know, if you go, you know, Lower East Side, you know, it's crazy there. But that's where it's happening. People are looking there. So if you establish yourself there, and then you know you get yourself an out of the way place. No, you get yourself a storefront. You know, we see some. I think it's Satsuru. He came in contact because he walked by and saw, you know, the storefront. You know, and that was intriguing. And then it had the thing there that there's lectures. So he came back. You know, but if they had been in some nice little, you know, resorty kind of place, then it wouldn't have happened. So that's our idea. You go right in the center. So we could say, oh, it's not peaceful there. No, the peace is within yourself. You could be out in the middle of the forest and not be peaceful also. You know, you're worried that, you know, are the stocks doing okay? You know, stuff like that. So you could be out in the woods. That is the last word in the Bhagavad Gita. Oh, in other words, this knowledge and peace culminate in Krishna consciousness. So this knowledge and peace culminates in Krishna consciousness. You're always endeavoring in Krishna consciousness, therefore you get these qualities. And by practicing those qualities, then it culminates in Krishna consciousness. Right? Full Krishna consciousness. You're Krishna conscious to practice it, of course, in the first place. But we don't have the qualities. By practicing it like that, we get the qualities by Krishna's grace. By continuing that, then we culminates in full knowledge and peace. Right? So that's the last word. Yes.
To the previous point, it's for the preaching that we should go in the center and live where everything is happy.
Yeah.
But for the family life, kids and everything, wouldn't it be better to find some more peaceful situation?
But the point is means you do have the, yes, you want to see what will be better for the children because they're not seeing the preaching. You know, it's not that they're going to high school and they're just thinking about preaching like that. You know, if they do, then they'll give the born-agains a run for their money. But, you know, but otherwise, they're not. So the... So you'll create an environment that's there, just like we see in student life, they're taken out of the normal social system. But we're talking about those who are within the social system. Does that make sense? So we see, you know, Narad Muni, he preaches everywhere, but much of his famous preaching is where? Right? He goes straight to the king. Why just the king? Goes to the emperor. Catch the emperor, then you get all the other kings. The king control everything else. So, you know what I'm saying? So as I said, you could consider the new branch, you know, emperor preaching.
That's practical.
Yeah. Not going for these heads of state, we're going for the emperor. Right? You know? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Think about it. Okay, that is the last word in Gita. No, culminating in Krishna consciousness. That's what we're trying to get. So it's always coming back to that, but you have these tools. So in other words, the form is the manifestation of how to gain what it is you're looking for. Understand? So in other words, what you're looking for is the masculine. The forms and activities are the feminine. Right? So the point is if we... The feminine engaged in the masculine, that's what you're trying to do. The difficulty is we see the feminine and try to enjoy it for ourselves. So we take the forms and actions for our own purpose, rather than the forms and actions are for Krishna. So that's the difficulty when we discuss Krishna, okay, like that, then we can appreciate, but there's no forms or action. So therefore it's impersonal. Because person means action, means form. So actually, that's why we just see Brahman. That's, remember, Prabhupada was saying that the neophyte leans towards the impersonal. It doesn't mean he's an impersonalist. He leans towards the impersonal. Right? In other words, the Brahman aspect. But not even understanding that's what he's doing. Right? Let me get into that. Okay, yes. So when we come to the point by the practice that we're not trying to exploit the forms and actions that gain that quality that we're looking for. Then we can be an assistant too. That's why we're servant of the servant. So the forms and actions are the servants of that particular goal. So we're servants of that. You know what I'm saying? So instead of us being the lord of the kitchen, we're the servant of the kitchen. This kitchen is the form through which you can obtain Krishna as, you know, a bhoga offering. You know what I'm saying? So the pots and utensils was the feminine form to get the bhoga offering. Now the bhoga offering is the feminine form of, you know, pleasing Krishna. You know what I'm saying? So that's why they're non-different. We have to be able to, you know, it means what we were discussing before. And that non-difference, if that's appreciated, then one can then one can appreciate it. Because at any one time, the one turns into the other. Does that make sense? The one always becomes the other. Because there's a non-difference. Does that make sense? Okay, so then 51. Srila Vishnumad Chakravarti Thakur writes in his commentary to 438. In this world, amongst those who engage in austerity, yoga, and other processes, there is nothing to compare with knowledge. That knowledge is not easily obtained by everyone, but it is fully obtained by practicing Nishkama Karma Yoga. It is not unobtainable, but it is attained in time, not immediately. That knowledge is attained spontaneously within the self, not by accepting external sannyas. So here he's bringing out is that you have all these processes, right? But those processes are to gain knowledge, right? So these processes would be forms. Knowledge would be what you're trying to gain, right? Mm-hmm. So knowledge is superior, right? The masculine is superior to the feminine, mm-hmm. right? But it's through those forms, right? So now it's not easily obtainable, but it's only through practicing. So that means you're using the forms, but you can't use the forms for yourself. You have to use the forms for Krishna. Right? If you use it for someone else, yes, you use it for the family, then you'll get that benefit. You know, you use it for, you know, Fruta, then you go to the heavenly planets. You use it for, you know, in the connection with knowledge, you get liberation. You understand? Mm-hmm. So therefore the Naishkarmi here means in connection to the Lord. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, why would it turn into devotional service? Right? So this knowledge you're talking about is that knowledge of Krishna. Right? So that comes, it says, in time, not immediately, because Krishna is unlimited, so you're not going to know him. Mm-hmm. So how can the unlimited be known? Mm-hmm. It's only through his grace. Mm-hmm. Right? Does that make sense? Yes.
Confirmed.
Yes. Always seems to be during class. It seems to always fall. Yes. Not always that tree, right? Yes.
When this knowledge is not connected to Krishna, then it becomes a jnana, which
we. Yes. Then we call it austerity, yoga, other processes. Mm-hmm. But when it's connected to Krishna, we call it Nishkarma, Nishkam Karma Yoga, or you know, or Nishkarmya. Generally, we see in the Gita, generally probably uses Naishkarmya, and in earlier chapters of the Bhagavatam, but the latter chapters, you see they use this term Nishkam Karma Yoga. 11th Canto uses this. But Naishkarmya is the when you put it together. Right? Does that make sense? So Nishkam Karma, then when you do Sunday on it, you get Naishkarmya. So it's the same thing. Sometimes devotees get, we use the term Nishkam Karma Yoga. Prabhupada doesn't talk about that. No, he talks about Naishkarmya. It's the same thing, just, you know, a little fancier with the Sanskrit. Okay, so it's not immediate. This knowledge attains spontaneously within the self means Krishna reveals it. Right? And it's appreciated by the self, the soul. Right? So in other words, the conditioning is not going to appreciate it. It's the soul will. So that means if you have a very intellectual conditioned nature, you still can't understand this. Right? Because other processes means the process of jnana. Right? So it can't be understood. That's the difficulty. We may think, I'm intelligent, therefore I can understand. That's the problem with the academics. They think, I'm intelligent, so there's nothing I can't... I'm a PhD, so there's nothing I can't understand. But the problem is there's plenty you can't understand. Like that. So that is the difficulty. Is that it's revealed within the self, so the soul understands through the consciousness. Then one is able to appreciate that and apply that through the medium of your intelligence. So you can explain everything in this. You understand? So the gross and subtle body is based on the consciousness. So the consciousness is fully Krishna conscious. That means then that will be, you'll be able to express that through whatever the conditioned nature you have. So you're an intellectual, you'll be able to intellectually explain it. You're not an intellectual, you'll explain it in a simple way. But you will be able to get to the essence that explain it. That's why then this whole point is that it keeps coming back to the knowledge given by Krishna by the spiritual master. Right? But the most important is to remember Krishna. Right? And so all these practices are there, but the most important are these direct practices. Right? But one will be able to always perform these direct activities, be absorbed in Krishna by Krishna's grace through practice. It's not immediate. Right? Because we say, this is the last, this is transcendental knowledge, because one is situated in serving Krishna. Right? So there's no difference between the knowledge and the practice. Right? Different forms. But of one thing. You know what I'm saying? Something says, like, we don't make a big deal out of Shri, Bhu, and Nila. Well, the internal potency. Internal potency means these three. But Krishna doesn't make a big distinction. Right? As individuals, maybe, but as potencies, no. Does that make sense? So the point is they are distinct aspects. You know, the form itself and the activity applied to the form. You know, but they go together. It means that activity can be only applied through that form. That form only has practical application through that activity. So they're different, but non-different. And through that activity form with that form, you get this result. That result can only be attained through that form and activity. And that form and activity only have meaning connected to the result. You understand? So this is where you always get this masculine and feminine principle. It's just as you expand it, you know, the position changes. But it's the same thing. Right? It doesn't change from that, yes.
All right. Very often it seems like the soul understands, we understand things on some luminal or
yes.
level before the intelligence can really grasp it. Is that possible?
Yeah, because the Lord is revealing. Because the conditioned nature, that's practice. That's why he uses the term practice. But fully obtained by practicing Nishkam Karma Yoga. And then up here it says...
I have a question. So you said, yeah, that's true. So when Prabhupada would say things to people like... understand Krishna consciousness by your intelligence, because intelligence is the next door neighbor of the soul.
Yes.
He wasn't talking about material intelligence then.
No, it's the chit potency. It means knowledge is knowledge. Then you have its application in its natural state or through its conditioned state. But intelligence is intelligence. You know, just like your arm is your arm, whether it's the real one or the one in the mirror. But the original one is there. So when we talk about your arm, we mean the original one. But if you do that, the one in the mirror automatically works. But if you try to operate just the one in the mirror, then you know, you'll get it, but it's indirect, because you know, you look in the mirror and then see how it moves, and then you'll get, okay, I want it to go up. Okay, there we go. You know, it's indirect. That's why the use of our material conditioning is indirect. But these qualities, what this lesson is talking about, association of devotees chanting the holy name of the Lord of Krishna, living in a sacred place and worshipping the Archamurti of Krishna, those are direct. So at any point, you can use the natural intelligence, the spiritual intelligence of the soul, because soul is Satchit Ananda. You can use it at any time. The tendency is we're not accustomed to, or we don't like to, because then it means giving up that we're the controller and enjoyer. So, but at any moment you can go, no, this is what's the right thing to do. But then we'll go, no, but then this and that and so this and that, so I can't do this. So we'll fall back into under the conditioning. Right? But the direct intelligence one can use.
So one is connected and one is disconnected.
That's the meaning of mixed devotional service. That it's you're doing both at once. It means it's dynamic because it is connected, but it's not prema because it's not fully connected. Right? So that means every devotee is doing devotional service. But devotional service, by its proper definition, is uninterrupted. So therefore only prema is technically devotional service. But the others are not considered devotional service only because it's not constant, not because it's not prema.
So original intelligence is fully connected to Krishna, fully submissive to, surrendered to Krishna.
Yes, but you still have to develop it. You have to develop it to, because we're saying here is that the point being brought out is there's no need to search for peace elsewhere. In other words, this knowledge and peace culminate in Krishna consciousness. So we are also, there's nothing so sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge. Such knowledge is the mature fruit of all mysticism. And he's mentioned here that knowledge is attained spontaneously within the self, not by accepting external sannyas. So we can understand here is what we're coming to the point of discussing the platform of bhava, or liberation. Because before, in the lessons before, then Prabhupada is discussing, you know, just the authority, where authority is, then hearing from that authority, you know, and then having that faith, and then somehow or another in that association practice, then practicing properly, then becoming fixed in that. But then the point is Krishna is the main thing. So hearing and chanting, that's the prominent. Like that. So he's bringing us through this, you know, Shraddha right on up. So at this point we see is what we're dealing with is the element of one's on the liberated platform. One is situated in the self, satisfied in the self, has knowledge in the self. But still, prema can be cultivated because then that is an attraction to Krishna. So in other words, there is the knowledge and peace is there because there is no connection to the material. Therefore, you don't disturb anyone, you're not disturbed by anybody. Right, that was the last point just before this.
Yeah, I'm just dropping in here. You're contextualizing.
So this is, so the idea is that that's why I use sannyas, because sannyas is not the form of sannyas. The form of sannyas is supposed to include indifference. That's the point. So indifference here doesn't mean the indifference of, you know, the modern usage where indifference means you don't care. Indifference here means is that you're not disturbed. You don't have an opinion. You don't have a bias. So therefore, whatever situation you're in, you use it for Krishna. Therefore, the situation is nice, you use it for Krishna. The situation is not so nice, you use it for Krishna. That's sannyas. So the form of it is supposed to afford that, because as a sannyas, you don't have a home. So therefore you're moving around, and sometimes you're in a good situation, sometimes not. Sometimes nice food, sometimes not. Sometimes good association, sometimes not. So it affords that you have to practice indifference. But the point is not in Nishkam Karma Yoga, you can practice by anyone, because sannyas means the result's not for you. Right? But the tendency is, I use it for myself, so whatever it is, I use for myself. Right? So the next stage is, I don't use the situation for myself. So therefore the austerity, the knowledge, that hardness. But the actual, after that, is that whatever the situation, I use it for Krishna. Just like whatever the situation, I use it for myself. Here it's whatever the situation, I use for Krishna. But that interim state, we'll generally call that the sannyas. But actually it's that third stage, that's sannyas. The other one is simply tools to get there. You know what I'm saying? Just like the kitchen isn't the result, the kitchen's the method. Does that make sense? That's the point. Yeah. Okay. So 1855 and 913 through 14. One can understand me as I am, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, only by devotional service. And when one is in full consciousness of me by such devotion, he can enter into the kingdom of God. O son of Prita, those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. Always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before me, these great souls perpetually worship me with devotion. Right, so now you're bringing out that these four practices are the prominent, are the main. Right? So, yeah. So those who understand this, right? And then it says, he understand me as I am, only through devotional service. Right? So only, as we said before, only when God descends himself or sends the devotees, in other words, the knowledge given by him is accepted by us through the spiritual authority, then we can understand Krishna. So when one is fully conscious by such devotion, right? In other words, we'll be conscious by that devotion. We've heard from authority, so we take up the practice. So we are practicing devotional service. We are conscious, but we're not fully conscious. But when we're fully conscious, then we can enter into the kingdom of God. Because otherwise, if not, we're acting here based on our own conditioning. That's the difference. Entering into the kingdom of God means you're fully conscious. Otherwise, it's the eternal platform. So you can't be in the spiritual world and sometimes think you're Krishna and sometimes not. They're saying, there when we're dealing with Bhava, you're always thinking of Krishna, but it's how intensely you're thinking of Krishna. Right? Before Bhava, it's whether you're thinking or not. Bhava means you're thinking of Krishna, but on what level are you thinking of Krishna? They're saying, so when it's full of samadhi, then it's complete, right? That develops purvarag, therefore one's able to enter into the pastimes. You understand? Because being in the spiritual world and being in the directly in the pastimes, that they're two different stages. Does that make sense? You can be here in Mayapur and be doing services for Krishna, and then there's being in the temple room. You understand? So they're connected. But then there's that direct interaction. That only comes when you're fully absorbed. Because the point is Krishna is fully conscious. So if he's going to interact with you, he's going to be conscious of you at every moment. There's not going to be one breakage in that. So therefore, how will you satisfy him if you're breaking now and again the consciousness? It won't be consistent. In other words, it won't be devotional service as defined. Right, so it has to be constant. This is what it says, like that. So therefore, that's why it says that here. That's why it's important to see the stages that are talked about, because otherwise we will say, no, but the other acharyas, they bring it all out in that. No, Prabhupada's just saying it in language that we catch. You know what I'm saying? Because of the acharyas' language, it's only those who are more scholarly catch it. The general devotee reads these scholarly things and it doesn't mean anything. They'd rather stick to, you know, Prabhupada stuff. But it's just because of the language we are able to appreciate. Our conditioning is able to appreciate it. Therefore, we put the effort. But here we see it's just as the words go, what Prabhupada is saying. One can understand as they am only by devotional service. So he's saying before, it has to come by knowledge. And devotional service means the knowledge received from authority, practiced. That's devotional service. And when one is in full consciousness of me, it means, and when one means you're not originally. It means you're starting off the process and you're not. Then you become. Right? So it's by that consciousness that, and that devotion. So in other words, that devotion applied in that consciousness, then you enter into the kingdom of God. In other words, before you have consciousness is not full, so you're applying that in your devotional service. But it will make you advance. And Krishna will reveal within the heart. So then one will come to the point where one is fully conscious, right, and able to apply that in one's activities, right, in all situations. Right? So those who are not deluded means they're not conditioned. Right? So the great soul, under the protection of the divine nature, because they're functioning. Because otherwise, if you're not, just because you're not liberated, just because you're liberated doesn't mean that you're under the internal potency. Right? So by performing naishkarmya, right, by the sannyas, external sannyas, you could come to the liberated platform, but you're still not under the internal potency. Right? So that's only when it's done in devotion. So that's why the nishkam karma yoga has to be there. Right? They're fully engaged in devotional service. So that means all their knowledge is used in service to Krishna. So the naishkarmya means the results for Krishna, not for getting liberated. Right? Because you perform activities that are authorized without desiring result, you will get liberated. So that's what's not understood. Now, because of conditioning to apply that, let's say, in the Grihastha ashram, that would take a long, long time. Then one would see that that's too difficult. So eventually one would come to the Gyan platform. Or applying it in sannyas. But you're still talking thousands and thousands of lifetimes. But devotional service, the Grihastha can apply it. And just because he does every aspect without the desire for the result for himself, but to please Krishna, therefore the activities of the Grihastha ashram, or the Vanaprastha, or the Brahmachari, so all of those liberate one. That's the lower level. And because it's done for Krishna, then you get devotional service. Krishna reveals. So that's the meaning of the sannyas. So that's why the external is not necessary. But, as a natural progression, it affords a situation in which, you know, if you've been a whole lifetime with nice facility, then, you know, the tendency is you only like nice facility. So then, you know, if you put yourself in a situation, you may have nice, may not have nice. You know, because devotees only complain, okay, the sannyasi, they have all this facility. They only talk about the nice facility. Yeah. They don't talk about the not nice, you know. You know, the person will complain, you know, oh, you know, they got upgraded, they rode in business class, you know, on their flight to India. But the person complaining, how often does he come to India? How often does he fly? Once every 2 years? Try flying every once or twice a week, everywhere you go. It gets old real fast, along with yourself. You know what I'm saying? So it's not a facility. It's just, it's uncomfortable to be on an airplane. They're taking it as, oh, it's fun and it's different because you're doing the daily life. So therefore something different is a variety is you know, your happiness, right? That's what holiday is. You do something different. The holiday is more difficult than your regular life. But to get out of the difficulties of your regular life, you go on a holiday. But the holiday is way more difficult. But because it's different, you take it, oh, this is great, you're enjoying yourself. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the illusion. So then we'll think, oh, they're enjoying themselves. No, but for them, flying on an airplane is normal. You understand?
So this grass is greener on the other side.
Yeah, it's always
this is sutra mentality.
Well, yeah, it means you could say means from the element of that lament means ignorance. Mm-hmm. It was not necessarily that the person means by varna their shudra. Mm-hmm. You know, but generally most of these comments come from shudras and vaishyas. Mm-hmm. Shudras from the enjoyment part, you know, that they would like, it would be an idea. Vaishya from the money part. Mm-hmm. Why they should have the money. Mm-hmm. I should have the money. Mm-hmm. Like that. You know, so the shudra is why they should have the enjoyment. I should have it. And the vaishya, why they should, I should have the money for that. Because they'll become, it's so expensive. Mm-hmm. You know, the other's complaining, oh, it's that such luxury. That's how you tell the difference. Like that. These are the subtleties of... Okay. Okay, so they are fully engaged because they know me as the Supreme Person. So they're fully engaged because they know Krishna. So Krishna's revealed himself. So that knowledge, they're fully engaged. So we see each one nourishes the other. But it starts with Krishna. And then he empowers the devotees. Then we become touched by the chit potency. Right? Then we try to apply that. Since somehow or another, right? Prabhupada didn't say, and then you take up the regulated. No, he said somehow or another. Mm. Because somehow, you don't know anything about it, but you're starting. So you're sitting there in your apartment somewhere, and then whatever's in your house, then you offer that can of beans. you know, like that, you know, that with time you figure out that after opening it you'll offer it rather than before, you know, and stuff like that, or, you know, or you offer it, then put it in the microwave, you know, you after the microwave, then you offer it, you know. You know, so like this, then you start to, you somehow or another connect it. Then by association of devotees, then you start to become regulated. Yes.
Somehow or another, does that also indicate that the process is supreme to the person performing it?
Yes, it's supreme to the person, it's supreme to the forms, it's supreme to the activities. But it doesn't mean that one can, by false ego, think that a lower level is good enough. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't. The adult can't say, well, the kid threw a tantrum and got what he wanted, so why can't I? No, it means, yes, when you're new, you do these things, no one's going to complain. But once you mature, then that's why it says the next stage is now you follow a regulated process that is authorized by Scripture, right? Because then means somehow or another you just connect whatever you're already doing, but then you start learning that some of the things you're doing aren't ideal. You know what I'm saying? The person starts devotional service, he sees being a vegetarian. So, you know, he goes out, you know, to dinner with somebody, and they've ordered something like that. So he picks the meat out and eats the preparation. But he thinks of Krishna and things like that. So that's somehow or another. Then by doing that, then after a while he gets the point, you don't eat those preps that the meat was in the first place. You know, so slowly, somehow or another. Right? Then it comes to this. Then it comes to the point of remembrance. Right? You know, and they have that knowledge. So we see here, you're also going through that the yoga ladder. Your karma's there. Mm-hmm. You know, unregulated, then regulated, then that knowledge, then that meditation. Mm-hmm. But of the meditation, then these activities are the most important. Mm-hmm. Right, remembering Krishna is what you want to get, but you still have to express that through activity. So these are the most important. So it's not that when you get to jnana, karma is not applied or jnana is not applied. They're always applied. So the yoga ladder is showing the natural step through, but devotional service means the whole thing is there. You understand?
Like that.
So we see we perform the, with a little bit of knowledge, we perform the activity, because activity has to be formed with knowledge. From that you gain more knowledge. From that you improve the quality of activity. So that goes back and forth by Krishna's grace until it comes to this point of it's complete. Fully engaged, because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. So up to that point, we may be actually functioning on, you know, Paramatma or Bhagavan. So, oh, Krishna's everywhere, or Krishna's in control. If I do this, I'll get a bad result. Or if you do that, Prabhu, you go to hell. But who controls that? Not Bhagavan. Paramatma controls that. You understand? So the considerations are there. So it comes to this state because he's come to the point of Bhagavan. His realization is now within that. Okay? There's non-difference of the three. So we realize Krishna is the ultimate goal, but what we're dealing with is Krishna as Brahman and Paramatma. You understand? But as we start to deal with Krishna as a person, that becomes more prominent, then the quality of his devotion increases. Always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, right? So that understanding of what, and then endeavoring, right? So the two go together. See, we see here, he's always remembering Krishna, right? By that knowledge he has of Krishna, and endeavoring means he's applying it in devotional activities. So the two go together. Bowing down, he's submissive, right? So they worship with devotion. So all that means, so it means. In that submissive mood, he's always chanting and serving. Mm-hmm. So then that's perpetual. Mm-hmm. You know, he's come to that stage. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're trying to get to. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Okay. So we'll continue. Today's Monday. Yeah. Tuesday.
Monday.
Yes, tomorrow's Tuesday. So we have class tomorrow. Okay. Okay. How
about 10:30?
Yes. Now, a discussion has come up on this. Is that we have the material here for whoever is supposed to get the material. That means, by material, we do not mean mundane. Though it is aparavidya. So that's a difference in what we're dealing with. Here we're dealing with paravidya. This will be aparavidya. right? Material knowledge connected. So the question means the 10:32, 10 to 12. That's the standard time, and that's what we have there. One difficulty is that to prepare this, then it would be an advantage if we did it in the afternoon. Because Antadweep has classes in the morning. So he could come, that way he can take the notes and he can develop it. Because then you get the, because as we go here, because this is only the first part. 16 pages, just part one, like that. Part two will be hundreds of pages, but part two and three. One and four are this big, so you could be happy about that. So there's a question of that. The only reason of bringing that up also is that there's the idea that when we're going through these topics, means the first year at work, this year you can see is we're not finishing. Just the volume is not finishing in that 6 months. The idea of the 6 months was only for devotees could come for 6 months, attain the courses, and then go. But the original concept was it was 27 weeks of classes, right? So 18 and 9. So this is the 9, we had the 18. So it seemed to work when we were doing the first year of the Gita. This year it's not working so well. It did on some of the things. But the next year and after that, the Bhagavatam, it becomes very obvious because you have to deal with a certain amount of chapters per term. It means year. You have to get in 54 chapters a year. Otherwise, you don't finish in 6 years. So somehow or another, because we had done the Gita in that, I had just stopped that there, and then I was calculating the other day, and it won't. So that means this morning class will go right from Vishrut Mahotsav right through to the Akshay Tritiya. Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense? It means we've been having the morning class, which is the main lesson, right? So this is Gita. And then the second class is, you know, Ishupanishad, Upadeshamrita, and Nectar Devotion, right? Does that make sense? So the main course, the smaller ones then may be able to fit in or may, you know, like that. At least the earlier ones did. We'll have to see next year. But then in this one, it's definitely not. Right? It has to go for the full 27 weeks, right? Now the other aspect is that because of that, then that cuts into the Bhakti Anuchana. Because the Bhakti Anuchana was also originally conceived of running on the full year for the full 27 weeks, because the depth we're going to go into, even though we're dealing with just the principles, but the depth will be the depth that we're using here in studying the Gita. You know, does that make sense? So then the problem comes up is, does that have to therefore run as a third class? So that's the point coming up, is that the third class would be, you know, not that it's third class, but it's Jesus. Is that would be the evening. You know, this 4 to 5:10. That's the time it could be run. Does that make sense? So that 4 to 5:10, that would be the time that it could naturally be run. So all we're doing is checking if that would, because we know that the 10:30 to 12 works for the philosophical course, but now it's a matter of checking: will this time work for the Bhakti Anuchana? Because then, instead of it taking 12 years, we might also be able to get through it less. Because less than 12 years would be ideal. You know, 6 years would be better, or shorter. It was originally conceived of as 3 years, but then it was much more time.
So the 10:30 to 12 would be used to finish off the...
No, it means we wouldn't necessarily run that now.
Uh-huh.
And just run this and then that. Or we could run that, you know, now just, you know, go through this more, because we're almost finished with this. But I mean, well, this is, we start, we only have... Then we start page 3. Part 3, but we haven't done the fourth part.
The appendix.
No. It's not an appendix. See, what it is that when Prabhupada wrote it, he wrote 1, 2, and 3. Mm. Then there's a fourth part that's written. Mm-hmm. That's technically part of an extension of the first part, right? But The Tantra put it together as part of the second part. So then going through it, then we saw that it would apply better the first part, because this Vedanta Sutra is divided, Sambandha is divided into two. So it's actually part of that. It's just more further explanation on Godhead. Right? So he put it as part of Abhideya, but it's actually part of Sambandha. So there was a confusion where to put it in. Mm-hmm. So for this year, we'll be doing it at this fourth part, but it actually should be the second part. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So this should go through more quickly. Mm-hmm. Like that. Because it gets, I think, less technical in here. But the fourth part will probably be quite technical. But having gone through this, it'll be easier. So I mean, so now this discussion is this glass is there, that's just like that. And so the element is the Bhakti Anuchana. We run that in the evening because there's the chance that next September we'll continue that, running like that. Then the other question is this, and we would have the 10:30, 12 would be that. So there would be definitely that. Question now is, are we comfortable with running that the Bhakti Anuchana at the 4 o'clock? And if that's there, then the question comes, is, do you want to run the 10:30 to now also, just in case? So that means do we want to try running all three now and see if we kill ourselves?
Yes.
So that we know. Huh? No, because it means it's a matter of, because here we only have 9 weeks. So if it works, great, then we can try it for 18 weeks. But if it doesn't work, then we know we have to make an adjustment. Right, what's your problem?
I can't afford, so
yeah.
No, you'll brahmacharya, so whatever.
No, that's fair.
Let's try.
Yeah. Well, the thing is it is a separate course, this. You know. So that's the one advantage. Okay. But the second course in the morning, is that something we continue with?
Yes.
Okay, so then it's just a matter of who can come in the evening.
Yes.
Comes.
Yes. Time is 4 o'clock?
4 to 5:10.
Anyway, we will be recording the classes. So
yeah, that's of course. Of course.
They can get the recordings.
Yeah. Yes. So you might as well try. Yes. The worst that can happen is it won't work.
You'll be speaking to a recorder.
Yes. Yeah, so, Mr. 200M.
Any questions?
Yes.
Sorry, 9 weeks. Are you going to start?
I will try this in 9 weeks, but as we said, we were going to do 9 weeks of this of two periods.
That's what I understood.
But so because we've taken one by this...
Yes.
Oh, you're saying is then do this for two periods.
No.
What we can do is we will try that if this one ends.
That's right.
Then we can take the two periods for it. Well, then we have three periods. Because this is actually very vague, Mom. You know, I think it's something like 2,000 shlokas. So it's... You know, it's three times bigger than the Gita, but it doesn't have the purports. Mm. You know.
So we start from today's three classes?
Yes.
Good. Didn't work according to plan. Oh well, we'll continue this then. And then... Yes? No?
We are going to spend a lot of time there.
Yes. You wear out the blankets, I guess. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jaya.
Srila Veda Bhaktivedanta ki.
Jaya.
Janitai Gaurav.
Jaya.